You're about to listen to a Second City Works presentation, brought to you in partnership with WGN Radio. Subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming platform or listen on WGNradio.com. And be sure to share.
Hi, just a couple of housekeeping notes before we start. Although the Second City's live theater and live classes are not happening, we have turned everything virtual. You can take Second City classes in writing, in improv, and acting. There's a kids camp. We're also doing virtual corporate webinars and keynotes and workshops. It's all really kind of amazing, everything that we've been able to turn around. Plus, Second City is offering live improv shows on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. You can get all that information at www.secondcity.com. Check it out. The Second City is a world-famous comedy theater, and it got so famous because it has produced generation after generation of comedy superstars. That didn't happen by magic. Second City's improvisational pedagogy fuels great performance, and the same practices that made stars of everyone from Bill Murray to Tina Fey can be applied for success offstage, at work, at home, and in the world. I'm Kelly Leonard, Executive Director of Insights and Applied Improvisation at the Second City. This podcast is about collaborative conversations, seeking connections, and finding a better way. This is Getting the Yes And.
Days can't be counted by the money spent. Today was just another better left unsaid. Days can't be counted by the time to rent. Tomorrow's just another like the one that comes next. The car on the highway that leads to the job at the desk by the boss with the elegant watch. The tick of the clock and the tick of the clock mark the moments till the ticking stops.
My guest today on Getting the Yes And is Beth Newell. Beth is the co-founder and editor of the satirical women's magazine Reductress. She co-authored the book How to Win at Feminism and co-created the Reductress Minute and Mouth Time podcasts. Her work has been featured in The Onion, McSweeney's, and The New Yorker. She hosts the podcast We Know Parenting with her husband, Peter McInerney. Beth was named by Rolling Stone as one of the 50th funniest people right now and as one of Time Magazine's 23 people who are changing what's funny right now. She gave birth to her daughter in the backseat of a Honda Fit, which likely inspired her new book that she wrote with Jackie Ann Ruiz. It's called There's No Manual, Honest and Gory Wisdom About Having a Baby. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we're taping this on May 7th, and I'm sheltering in place at home in Chicago, and you're in Massachusetts, you said, right?
Yeah, Massachusetts.
Are you okay? Everyone safe? Everyone healthy?
Yeah, we're good. We're just up until about a minute ago, there was a child screaming right outside this room. So luckily, we're locked
See,
in now.
these are the things that might happen. I'm on my front porch. I heard a couple arguing across the street that might come into this podcast. You know, we'll work with it. I think there's something uniquely wonderful and horrific when people in the comedy industry have children. You and I share this. And I think it has to do with the incredible vulnerability that you need to possess as a human being in this industry, and then your ability to put that vulnerability into a kind of shared truth. So then when you have kids, that just gets like multiplied many times over. Does this strike a chord with you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think this is kind of part of the impetus for this book is when I became pregnant, I felt like there wasn't a lot of resources for that shared truth. Like I was like, what's the story here? Like we don't have a lot of like female representation in comedy to begin with. And then when it comes to moms, it's like even lower. So I was like, what, can someone tell me what's like really going on here? And I was like, someone needs to write this book.
Yeah. So the if I had to sum up the major truth of the book, it's that it's hard. Right. If there's one thing the book tells us is that motherhood is really, really hard, and we don't talk about that part enough. And you actually write that motherhood is hard, quote, in a gun twisting, bone shifting, perennial tearing away that is impossible to fully convey to anyone who hasn't crawled through the baby trenches. So expand on that. I've gone through this with my wife. I know how excruciatingly hard it is, but people don't really play that part up at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you have mom friends, I think hopefully they'll be kind of honest with you and you can get some of the dirty details. And I was lucky enough to be, I've been in a mom group the last few years, but I actually, a Facebook mom group, but I don't think I was at the time I got pregnant or, and for a couple of years. So I felt a little bit in the dark in terms of those like visceral details of like, what is it going to feel like when these things happen? Like, what is happening to my nipples as I'm breastfeeding? Like, what is this all going to look like? Is like this weight ever going to come off, or like how? And I think, you know, I was lucky enough to have midwives and doulas during my pregnancy who were very helpful in many of those respects. And like, you know, they'd like literally grab my son in my belly and like show you where the head was and where the body was. And I thought like that stuff was fascinating to me. Like that was the stuff I wasn't getting at gynecological visits.
Right.
And I just wanted to give those sort of details that like, unfortunately, when you turn to your mom friends, sometimes they're too tired to remember anything at that point. But if they haven't had a baby, you know, less than a year ago, it's just kind of a wash at that point. Like, you're just sort of like, you'll figure it out. I just wanted to convey some of those like feelings, because when it's happening to you, you feel kind of insane because no one really told you it would happen. And I think it just helps to know that many other women have experienced the exact same thing.
In the section of the book that you title Weird Systems That Might Mean You're Pregnant, I noticed this. So my wife, I remember telling me that when she got pregnant, she felt like her brain was broken. And that clearly sort of happened to you too, right?
Yes, definitely. It's still happening.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily change. Also, like needing so much water, like water.
Yeah, especially when you're breastfeeding. Like, you just feel like you could just be drinking water all day long.
You also write in here, quote, "You have all the feelings." I know what that means, but maybe for our audience, tell them what that means to you.
I think it's just being overwhelmed, because it's a combination of your circumstances and your hormones at the same time. So it's like you're simultaneously experiencing like the most life-changing event of your life to have your first kid. And then you're also, your body is flooded with hormones that are making you feel more love and sadness and everything all at once. It's just like a real amplification of sensory overload.
A lot of swearing in the book, which I certainly appreciate. One of the chapters is called Holy Shit, This Is Happening. And one of the things you talk about is breathing and the importance of breathing. And we've talked about this in the podcast on a bunch of different topic areas. You write, quote, "As you inhale each cookie, try holding in a crumb-filled breath for a count of 1, 2, 3, and slowly release. That's meditating, ! Breathing's hugely important in throughout the whole thing. And actually, I think still, right? I mean, this is the advice, I heard someone actually gave this advice the other day, which is like, what do I do when, like, the first thing I do when, and it's always, this, always take a breath. Important for you too.
Yeah, so much of being a parent is just, it's almost like a Buddhist test to see if you can like hold it together while like everything's falling apart around you. Like, you know, especially now that we're all doing this like work from home thing with kids running around, it's just like, you have to sort of like learn to embrace the chaos.
And you also write in the book, quote, "Remember, no one knows what the fuck they're doing." Very true. This is not a thing that it's very improv, right? Because there really isn't a script for this, and anything can happen during the pregnancy, and it's different for everyone.
Yeah. And that, I think a lot of what we wanted to get across during the book was this idea that like, there's no perfect way to do this. It's not like you missed a class and there was a way for you to figure this out where your baby wouldn't be crying right now. Like, it's going to be a mess. And something that I had really become attuned to through the years of running Reductress was just the way that women's media is constantly making us feel lesser than, or like we have to check all these boxes. And then that kind of messaging really gets amplified when you're becoming a mom, because society wants you to be really devoted to your kids and like almost kind of throw away your own identity. So we wanted to like spend a lot of time in the book just like reminding new moms that they're a human being with needs and desires that should be tended to, regardless of the fact that they also need to take care of this baby. And I think at the end of the day, what I wish was a more widespread message was the sort of like putting on your own oxygen mask first, because I think if you are tending to not just your health, but your mental health, and making sure that you feel happy as possible about what you're going through, you will be a better, more present parent.
Yeah, very true. Wait, I meant to ask you about this way earlier. What you had your baby in a car?
Yeah, so that was my second. It's a really long story, but so when my son was born, it was a really excruciating 18-hour labor. And what I found out afterwards was that it was probably because my hips were not properly aligned. A lot of people, without knowing it, we have like a hip joint that's sort of locked up. Mm-hmm. And so during my second pregnancy, I went to the chiropractor to have my hip joint loosened up. And it's apparently much easier to manipulate those joints when you're pregnant, because all of the relaxin hormone in your body is like loosening up all your joints. And so apparently I did a really good job loosening up my hip joint, because I had a much more productive labor at home. And I think because the pain was much less than the first time, I just did not realize how far along I was. And my husband was sleeping soundly beside me the whole night, as I moaned in pain. And, we got up in the morning, and my doula wanted to come ride to the hospital with us to try to like keep me, you know, calm and everything. And so we called her right away. She came over, and we right as she walked in the front door of our apartment, my water broke. And what I didn't realize at the time was that was like sort of the last thread holding everything in. I was like fully dilated and didn't know it. And so as I walked outside to the car, my daughter's head must have been like shimmying lower and lower. And so we get in the car, and my doula had me sitting in the back seat, like hands on the headrest, facing out the rear window. And I had this like urge to push, which you feel at that point in labor. And I said, I want to push. And my doula, who is this really lovely Austrian woman, was like, do not push. And I didn't even try to push. I just had a contraction that like shot my daughter's head out of my body. And she was suspended, hanging out of me in the back seat. I was on my knees, and I had to tell my doula, I was like, the head is out. So we like pull down my pajama pants, and my husband, who's driving the car, turns back and like looks at my daughter in the face. And he was like, should I pull over? And my doula was like, yeah, you need to pull over. So he got the midwives on speakerphone so they could talk my doula through it. And he called 911, and it all worked out. And honestly, it was like a way better labor than the first time around. So I was very happy for it to be over.
Oh my God, that is incredible. I can't even imagine what was going through your mind. Well, I mean, maybe the best time to do it, because your mind is so, you know, elsewhere, or both present and not. Amazing. This made me really think back to when Anne was pregnant with Nick. This was 22 years ago. And we signed up for a group birthing class, but the instructor could not command the room whatsoever. And it was all these other privileged couples who just talked over her and then didn't pay attention. And we did like two sessions, and we never went back. We're like, nope, we're like, you know, and Anne read a bunch of books like that. So in terms of your prep, did you do any group classes, or did you just work with the doula and midwife?
Yeah, we did. It was like this kind of stuff in my life, I feel like, is always a mess, because they always like, I think as a blessing in disguise from the universe to prevent me from being too obsessive about it, I always get like a lot of things thrown at me at once. So like the month I got married, we also like moved. And then the month that like my son was born, we ended up having to move like 2 weeks before he was born, because we were trying to buy a place. Mm-hmm. And so it was like pure chaos. And we were like, I was trying to set up my midwife to near where we were moving, while like we were moving to Westchester and we lived in Brooklyn. And I was like, dear God, please let us move in time for this birth to happen. Because I was trying, it's like, that's another long story, is I was trying to do a home birth that didn't end up happening because my water broke and I had to go to the hospital early. And anyway, I was trying to navigate all this stuff, and there was just like no classes that would work for us. And so we ended up, my midwife, her assistant taught birth classes and gave us like a private session, and like did sort of like the baby sorry, not birth classes, like the baby care classes, yeah. which like was one of the many things I didn't know I should be worried about. And that was really helpful, just like infant CPR type stuff. But it is, it's one of those things where you're like, all that stuff kind of like goes out your head the moment you're holding a baby, and like mm-hmm. it almost doesn't even matter, you know?
No, I know what you mean.
It's just, like the thing of when, you know, when you get a baby and they're like sending you home from the hospital, it's so overwhelming because you're, no matter how much preparation you've done, you're sort of like, what am I doing? Like, how am I going to keep this baby alive? And like, it's terrifying. And I don't necessarily think like the prep makes a huge difference. Like, you kind of just have to intuitively be present and figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when we left the hospital with Nick, I was like, why are they letting us leave with this tiny? We are, you know, and I didn't have diaper. I was like, oh, I got to get diapers. Like, we were semi-prepared, right. you know, and then, but I think that like most things, you adapt and then you realize that these babies are way more resilient than maybe you thought they were.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, thank God they're more resilient.
you also say in the book, quote, babies are annoying by design.
Yeah. So,
but that's true, right? That's how you know how to take care of them.
Yeah, they're really good at getting your attention when they need something.
I want to talk. You touch on something that I feel like no one talks about, and we should, which is mental health with regard to this. And you say, quote, birth trauma is real and common and a legitimate reason to seek out care. I know that people don't report cases of postpartum depression, that like it's highly unreported. It's a weird thing when people go back to work. I don't know if you experienced this yourself, but you know, talk to us about what you, in your research and looking at this area, because I think this is hugely important and more people should be talking about this kind of trauma.
Yeah, postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety are much more common than I think any of us realize. And I don't think the statistics are really even there, because I think some of the most like at-risk communities are not being, you know, properly monitored for this kind of thing. But it's hard because it's one of those many things, as I was saying, that doesn't get talked enough about for women, because it's this moment where the world thinks we're supposed to be this happy mom and they're expecting us to celebrate this thing. And it's like, your body's broken. You haven't slept in days. Your sleep deprivation is literally a torture technique, and it will make you go insane pretty quickly, I think, if you're not careful. And yeah, it's just, I think almost everyone gets the baby blues. And that is, the baby blues, I think, are actually a lot more extreme than most people realize until you're in it. Like, when you are, you know, 2 days postpartum or whatever, and your hormones are surging and you're just like in tears, like feeling like your life is over. And it's, even when people tell you that that kind of thing is happening, it still is shocking how like fast and strong it comes on, I think, because you're just like, you know, it's not uncommon to be in labor for 18 hours like I was, which means right. not only were you in excruciating pain for 18 hours, but you didn't sleep for a day. And now you're going home with a newborn that right. you have to take care of, who's not letting you sleep. And when you're in the hospital, you're being checked on every 5 minutes by nurses who keep waking you up. So, yeah, I think it's really important. And I think even as I look back on it, and I feel like I'm someone who's more aware of these issues than maybe the average person, I think I look back and think like, oh, I had postpartum anxiety and I didn't really realize that, because that wasn't something I was told to look out for, you know, right. as prepared as I was. I don't think I was just aware of my anxiety in life in general. And mm-hmm. then when you're dealing with a baby, obviously everything gets amplified. So yeah, it's just something I think we need to be priming women to seek out more help in general for all of these issues, and to be more honest about them with themselves and with each other. And that's really hard when we're so primed to put everyone else's needs ahead of ourselves.
And shame, right? That this idea that you're, you know, you should be the perfect mom, and, you know, and your mom was the perfect mom. And then you're like, wait a sec, was she the perfect mom? Or, you know, and like, and no, there is no perfect. There's just absolutely.
Right.
doesn't exist. It's interesting too in this section because, you know, we know, you know, some of the work that I've done with the behavioral science community speaks to how important a sense of connection is, meaning, purpose, connection to other people. And you say in the book, and this is really true, that it's, quote, it's really hard to make new friends as a grown-up. It is. It's really, that is something, and I've done it in recent years, and it's been lovely.
Yeah.
But I mean, I went a good 25 years without making a new friend, I don't think. But that sense of having a community is hugely important. And you both make fun of it in the book in terms of the types that you end up hanging out with or suggest not to hang out with, whether they're different types of moms. But talk to us a little bit about, like, where did you find your community in the sort of new world?
Yeah, I mean, well, one of the things we try to talk about in the book was, like, finding the community that works for you in the ways mm-hmm. that it works for you. Because when I was postpartum and I was running Reductress, I remember I was trying to get back to work as soon as possible because, I'm like half the company, you know, and I mm-hmm. could feel the strain it was putting on other people for me not to be there. But I wasn't like at home all the time going to Mommy and Me, like sing-along classes and stuff like that. Not to like shame those or anything. It wasn't my schedule. And then I was coming home and dealing with the baby and I didn't have a lot of those outlets. And so my co-author Jackie was actually someone I reached out to when I was pregnant because she was an acquaintance who I didn't know very well. And I knew she was pregnant. And I didn't know other pregnant people or moms really, or there's people who are like much older than me that hadn't had babies recently. And, so I reached out to Jackie and we ended up sharing a lot of information about what we were mm-hmm. researching during pregnancy and having babies and just commiserating about our spouses and, sleepless night texts and, having that sort of digital connection. Cause we both moved out of Brooklyn very quickly after having babies. We would text a lot and talk. And then I eventually found an internet mom group that was started by other comedy moms. And that became a really safe space for us. I think it was really, obviously the internet Facebook groups are not always the most communicative, calm places. But because this group was started by improvisers in particular, they tried to foster a really honest, supportive group of people, and it was just a great place to be told that you weren't crazy and to really visibly be honest with each other about what a mess everything was, and that was so helpful.
So in a second I'm going to ask you for a yes and story, which is how we always end the podcast, but I want to ask you about a couple of things in the book. Talk to us about the tyranny of the unplanned car nap.
Okay, so we talk about The car nap is when your kid falls asleep in the car, mm-hmm. and it can be a big problem because once you need to get out of the car, if your kid wakes up at like 20 minutes into what should be a 2-hour nap, they're so angry. They're so angry and they don't want to go back to sleep. So you end up having to like keep driving around for hours at a time or park your car and read a book and like pee into a 7-Eleven cup or something. I feel like almost every mom I know has a story now of like almost peeing their pants in the car just because like you're being held hostage there by an infant.
This was our life with Nick. He would just crash in the car and then it'd be like, are we going to try to get him out? And you would like, you'd do this really gentle lifting out that it's something would always screw up or a horn would go up or whatever. And then Nora would have such fits in the car, usually coming home, that Ann and Nick would have to leave the car and they'd just leave the car and then the car would shake. It would just be Nora's fury for whatever, was going on at the time. Go ahead.
Apparently, it's like a survival, like evolutionary thing. I heard that like hunter-gatherers, when they were on the move, it was better for babies to be asleep. So if you had a baby strapped to your back or something, the baby would naturally fall asleep. It probably also like mimics being back in the womb or something. But then when you stop, they wake up because they want to eat. And that's like their body's cue to eat. So it's like this infuriating thing if you're driving and you stop the car. Like my son, like every stoplight he would wake up, or like if you're sitting in traffic, stop and go is just like always waking up and being like instantly angry. And you're like, no, 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 you have to stay asleep for like an hour, please.
Also, tell us about learning to mom rage.
We wanted to talk in the book about sort of, I think like when you become a mom in sort of a good way, you learn how to tap into like mama bear instincts mm-hmm. and this like protectiveness of yourself and your children. And so we talk a little bit about like just screaming into a pillow when you're angry, or just like sort of snapping at people when you need them to take better care of your child. And yeah, I think it's just, for better or worse, something that you learn how to do.
Love it. All right. The way we end the podcast with every guest is we ask them for a yes and story. I don't think I need to explain that concept to you at all. But it's a time in work or in life when, you know, you normally would have said no, but instead you said yes and. Do you have a time like that for us?
Yeah. I was thinking about if this qualifies, and then you don't care. But this is not necessarily something someone brought to me that I yes-anded, but I feel like when I had the idea for Reductress, it sort of came to me like late at night, just very randomly. And it was like sort of like, oh, we could have this thing that would, you know, satirize women's media and like give an outlet for female voices to do like sort of what we now do. And it's like one of those moments so many times in life. I think a lot of all creative people have this like resistance thing where you're like, oh no, it's not going to work. It's going to be a lot of work. I don't, you know, I'm not good enough, whatever. And so I had that moment of being like, either I do something with this idea like right now, or it just like disappears away. And it was like kind of like a do or die. Like I was like, do I do it? And so I decided like in that moment, like I was like, who can I go to like maybe actually get the ball rolling on this? And so I emailed Sarah, who's my co-founder of Reductress, and I was like, hey, I have this crazy idea. You're not going to want to do it. Like it was like one of those right. emails, like, I was like, you can say no to this. It's probably not worth your time. But I was like, do you want to try to make this website? And luckily she wanted to. So she yes-anded me back.
Yeah, well, you created the conditions in which you got a yes and, even though you seem to be like setting up barriers for yourself. Classic creative move. The book is called There's No Manual, Honest and Gory Wisdom About Having a Baby. Beth Newell, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Getting the Yes And is produced by Second City Works and WGN Radio. Our editor and producer is LF Garris. We get support at the Second City from Jenny Crowley, Abby Bumbledare, Mike Farinaccio, and Colleen Fahey. The music you hear at the beginning and end of the show is by Jukebox the Ghost. If you have questions, guest ideas, or if you want more information on working with Second City Works, you can go to www.secondcityworks.com, or you can email us directly at works@secondcity.com.
survive.